We're checking in again with the State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our weekly Tacky Talk. Good afternoon, Tacky.
Good morning, Joe, on a hazy Thursday morning.
This is the first full day of fall, actually. It arrived at 3:20 on the 22nd, and certainly doesn't feel like it.
No, it's like summer, we barely knew the situation. We barely knew the summer. It's been such a wet and warm summer, as people would discover, it was almost like a lost one again, in many ways. Last year, obviously, it was a much drier summer. We had drought alerts, but we had COVID, much more severe a situation last time. So yeah. It's been like two very interesting summers of one pandemic, height of pandemic, slowing us down. And this time we had Mother Nature slowing us down.
Yeah. Speaking of it's a good transition for to talk about climate change. The Lieutenant Governor was here in Quincy earlier this week, bringing a lot of money with her.
Yeah, $200,000 from the Green Communities Act to provide money for energy efficiency for the city to upgrade, again, the various energy efficiency in schools and city buildings, as well as some money to provide electric cars for some down the road. So the cities actually have about $1 million worth of Green Communities money, I think, over the last 5 or 10 years or so. I think it's every 2 year disbursement. So we're doing quite well with that. Plus, we actually had some Green Community monies. Everything's like a lifetime ago. I think like 4 years ago, for $1 million for tree planting.
Yes, right. That's right. Yeah, the governor came that time actually to put a tree up at North Quincy High School, I recall. So yeah.
I was down with the Housing Authority putting a tree up down in Germantown.
Okay, yep.
So, we've done all right under the Green Communities Act. There'll probably be more money coming. A lot of these funds actually are funded by your electric bill. Surcharge on your electric bill, that's the renewable energy cost, as well as built into your distribution charge. So your electric bill is composed of essentially three basic components. There's a few actually, but the big three are distribution, which is the small lines in front of your house, the transmission lines, which is the big lines you see mostly on television. Those are lines you really see that are 100 feet tall,
right?
Power bills. And then you have the energy charge, which is the physical electricity that you utilize.
Yeah.
Part of your distribution charge has an energy efficiency component, and that's where a lot of these Green Community Acts money is coming from.
You know, the state is committed, zero emissions by 2050. Is that something that's achievable, do you think?
It's a date.
Yeah.
It's a date. I mean,
is there any pending legislation in regards to climate change in Massachusetts right now that that the legislature is looking at?
Not right now. I mean, we did a major global warming peace bill, climate change bill at the end of session back in December. We had to tweak it again a bit regarding governor's objections back in January. And we got back to his desk actually very rapidly under Speaker DeLeo and Senate President Spilka. Speaker Mariano.
Right.
Lillian. Foggy in the morning with the haze. But, Speaker Mariano, made good his promise for getting major pieces done that are unfinished or having governor's issues very quickly at the beginning of the session. And climate change bill was definitely one of them, including things like addressing the renewable energy portfolio standards and updating them. And I understand the speaker was actually down on Block Island doing a tour of the new windmills going up as well. So as I like to tell folks, you can change all the dates you want, but if the power ain't there, it doesn't matter. With the hydro transmission plant, hydroelectric transmission lines coming through Maine. Maine still has a lot of objections to these transmission lines going through their state to come to Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Plus the build out of windmills, which will take some time. Windmills, you just don't plant like trees. You're constructing, 80 to 100 and 120 feet tall windmills, depending how deep the water is. We will be slowly but gradually increasing our renewable energy portfolio as each system comes online in on these different types of renewable power. So can we get to 2050 zero emissions? Who knows? But every single day we're moving one step closer to more renewable power, moving away from fossil fuels. And all we can do is just keep building, keep moving, and people at home, please try to use a little less electricity.
Yeah, it all helps for sure. Do these new renewable green energy companies, are they regulated by the state, Techie, like the traditional power companies are?
No, we don't regulate traditional power companies at all in the state. We're a deregulated state regarding electrical power. So it's a free competitive powers place in Massachusetts. You can choose the electrical supplier. So if you want to choose 100% renewable power, you can go to the market and buy that power yourself and try to find a competitive price on your own. For those who do not want to do that, we have what's called basic service or default service, depending what decade you grew up in on this issue.
Yeah,
I keep changing these names on me as I over the time, but the electric company will go into open market bid every 6 months and get the cheapest power they can get. You know, it's 100% pass-through. They make no money on it.
Right.
And as a result, it's an interesting quandary for folks to try to decide we're going to buy a private long-term power on own, rely on the utility company to buy the cheapest power possible every 6 months. And given the energy market, including the renewable energy market, it is a market subject force commodity. Mm. So if you buy all renewable, depending on supply and demand, may dictate the price of your renewable power. Same as fossil fuels.
So,
I mean, you know, it's up to everybody. If you want to go that direction, choose your own electricity. You have to be mindful of the fact you're subject to market forces. You maybe want to stick to a fixed price, but when fixed price ends, you know, market forces dictate.
It could go wherever.
And you're aware that last 2 years, Attorney General has been chasing down unscrupulous energy supply providers.
Yes.
Particularly targeting lower income and non-English speaking folks to switch over to competitive power supply without being fully knowledgeable about the potential price consequences they may have.
Yeah, very deceptive. You know, the good rule of thumb is if somebody comes to your door and wants to see your electric bill, tell them to go away.
Again, except for the U.S. Census, which is now over.
Right.
You know, you shouldn't give anybody personal information.
Yeah, it's great advice. Absolutely. Hey, speaking of, how is legislative redistricting going on Capitol, on Beacon Hill?
Well, we're voting on a bill this afternoon.
Oh.
This other conference committee to give the House the ability to draw the legislative lines if the citizen towns do not have something for us by the beginning of October.
Okay.
Change the due date from June 15th of this year to, I believe, December 15th of this year for all cities and towns to draw their final lines on wards and precincts.
Okay.
The way the Constitution is set up, the House members are in a quandary because you have to have lived in your district one full year from the prior election to run for the House of Representatives. And we do not want to deny anybody the opportunity to run for our seats. So we can't have two different set of lines on election day and after election day. So I suspect this will be a very rapid process moving forward. I know the process has been ongoing for several months, but it's going to be a very rapid process moving into October. I would not be surprised if we cut very close to the deadline on election day.
Yeah. I know here in Quincy, the Board of Registrars of Voters is voting Tuesday, the 28th, September 28th, on the new voting districts here in Quincy.
Yeah, then it goes before the city council and the mayor for final approval.
Right. Yeah. So it looks like Quincy will make the deadline.
Yeah, that'll be very helpful. And people who know Quincy obviously knows that we're against the ocean. So our legislative districts really don't have a lot of places to go.
Right.
So I don't anticipate much changes in the composition of neighborhoods of my district, but I do anticipate changing precinct lines in the district. So I'd like to remind folks, I do not draw the precinct lines.
Right.
I just live with them. And I do not choose your voting locations. Right. That is the city council's a very often call I get during election day regarding polling locations.
Oh, really? You get a call?
I get people complaining, why do you have to vote here as opposed to there? And that is a city function.
Don't call Tacky.
It's a city function. Okay. And by the way, the city council votes every year where the polling places are, including my elections.
Yes, that's right. So even they tell folks where to vote for you. So don't call you.
Precisely. I'm subject to the whims of the city as much as all of you.
Right. Okay. Can we talk about pandemic, Jackie, and how it's impacting the State House opening or not?
Well, I think the news, you may have seen the news, and it's available online to read, that there have been executive summary or executive report, whatever you want to call it, from the Speaker's Special Committee on COVID Reopening. We have a COVID task force the Speaker Mariano has assigned to, Leader Hogan chairing that. Our good friend Bill Driscoll from Milton, who heads the COVID-19 committee, is also on that task force. And I rely heavily on Bill Driscoll because he actually knows something about emergency management, actually one of his careers, a decade of emergency management work. So I do call Bill with advice, asking for advice mm-hmm. about what we're doing and how things are going. So we're going to vote today as well. It's kind of interesting asking about, we actually have a session today. We're talking this afternoon to approve an order to establish a reopening committee, which is be composed pretty much the COVID-19 committee. Okay. And set some deadlines down the road for a phase reopening pending how COVID-19 goes, starting with essential personnel, moving to somewhat of a hybrid model, moving towards a full staffing, and then moving towards open building.
Okay. All right.
Right now you can come to the State House, but we have to know who you are so we can contact trace you, because if something goes wrong, you should be made aware that you could be potentially been infected.
Right. And be a spreader too. Yeah.
Exactly. And we've had another case of a employee in the State House that is COVID-19 positive. Was thankfully not near other people. However, contact tracing began right away. So this is not the first time it's happened here, but this is, you know, it's been a long time since we've had incidences last winter.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, stay tuned as we continue to work towards that our reopening in some form and whether or not we're going to have access to hearing rooms again.
Okay. Yeah, which are tight spaces, right? And not well ventilated.
No, it's another place living inside a box, crammed like sardines in a can.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. I mean, my committee as a chair of Consumer Protection Professional Legislature had 15 hearings thus far. I think we're going to close out with 16 hearings. I lost track of the dates. And we have three major hearings pending for scheduling. We have a ballot question or two maybe coming my way in January. And then, of course, we'll have some late file bills, which are bills filed after deadline of deadline back in February. And, you know, we have some more executive sessions, which we will put on video as often as possible to maintain some degree of transparency. So, despite not having hearing rooms, you know, and working in this environment, you know, we've had a lot of public hearings.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Business is getting done for sure. What do you make of the state police union's challenge of the governor's vaccine mandate, Tacky?
The union has to represent its membership.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. And even if it's a minority of membership, I actually have talked to actually one of my other friends in the unions and National Associated Government Employees, and they explained it very succinctly to me. They represent all union members, including a minority voice. Mm-hmm. They have to ensure that minority voice is at least heard through the union. It should not reflect all the members of the union, but these are dues paying members and expect a degree of representation.
Okay.
And all the public employee unions are facing the same situation where they're due paying members who want their voice heard. So that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to see other public employees union may not make the newspapers.
Right.
But at least voice their concerns just to ensure that their members are. Now, they have not said they're anti-vaccination.
That's true, right.
In fact, many public employee unions are encouraging vaccination. They can't mandate it because they're not a management folks. They can't mandate vaccination, but they encourage it. And I've talked to some of my friends in the trade unions, and the unions are encouraging it. However, mm-hmm. some projects are requiring COVID tests or mandatory vaccination, and the trade unions and just basically tell the members, someone else is going to want to work. You have to decide what you want to do. Unfortunately, that is that simple. There is somebody else going to want to work.
Yeah. I mean, it is personal choice, but your choice has consequences, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's important for people to realize that, you know, in labor, they do have to represent the membership, even though the position of labor is to encourage. So I think it's a splashy little headline for the press, but I wouldn't read too much into it.
Yeah, yeah. Darn that press. Although they did point out that 80% of state police union members are already vaccinated. So
the Public Safety was on top of the list ahead of all of us.
Right.
In terms of vaccination opportunity, they've had longer vaccination opportunity than the rest of us.
Yes, they were first responders, right? Yep.
EMTs, firefighters, and police. And firefighters were actually administering a vaccine.
That's right.
In places. And, you know, they, I know for a fact that there's been quite a bit of infections among many police departments, including a few in our own police department and fire department.
Yep. Yep, they were on the front lines when there was no vaccine, so they were definitely putting their selves in harm's way for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, one would think this becomes more real when you have a colleague that's come down with it. And fortunately, we've talked about this all year, is that we know a lot of people have passed on from specifically from COVID-19, and not all of them have pre-existing conditions.
Correct. Yeah. Not surprisingly, the MCAS results earlier this week, as you well know, showed a deficiency in learning during the pandemic. Some money, I guess, available to try and remediate that from the state?
Yeah. I mean, we've had a lot of education issues and been very challenging. And I find this work environment horrific. I cannot imagine trying to sit in front of the screen for 8+ hours a day as a student, whether you're in first grade or in college, trying to focus and learn, and lack the interpersonal engagement, but also interpersonal engagement with your classmates and friends.
Right.
And as we talked about too, there's been a massive decline in enrollment as a combination of parents sending their kids to a private school, which actually had opened under COVID protocols prior to many public schools.
Yes.
As well as some kids that just dropped out.
Yep. Yep.
Unfortunately, and the children in need of services has been a major concern of the legislature and local government about what's happening with these kids. So it's a multiple issues, and MCAS scores, you know, just reflects the challenge of learning this environment and the need to try to obviously get vaccinations for younger children approved, and also trying to keep you safe. But I mean, you saw today news. Another high school sports athletic team got COVID.
Yep.
And shut down for a week. So it is continuing in schools. And this is the risk of going back to in-person. And hence the importance of continued hygiene, masks, social distancing, and so forth. Well, children have a lower death rate. It doesn't mean they can't get really sick.
Right. Yeah. I think, is there not federal pandemic money set aside specifically for public education?
Yes, we had federal pandemic money last year to provide funding for public schools and some private schools to be pandemic ready regarding shielding and air ventilation systems. And we have some stimulus money, again, that the legislature is trying to sell it to do, that we'll have some funds there for all education. But also remind folks that the Boston Globe yesterday also reported the situation of the ICU beds have now created a critical situation again.
Yes. Yeah.
UMass Worcester Medical Center is now overflowed. About 83% of all ICU beds in Greater Boston have been consumed or filled. And those are just COVID patients. Those include non-COVID patients.
Right.
And just 83% of COVID patients. And the other locations around the state is in the 90% zone.
Yeah. Are there field hospitals still ready to go if needed? Do you know, Techie?
They've shut down Worcester, which was the biggest field hospital, and I don't believe the one Essex County has is active either. When we came out of the higher vaccination rates going into June, we had been slowly shutting down the field hospitals. But if this continues as we head into the colder months and flu season's flowing back, and now we're outdoors with people around, so flu moving around is a legitimate higher chance that, as was last year when nobody was seeing anybody,
right?
Lower flu incidences. You know, don't be surprised if the governor reactivates the National Guard and reopens field hospitals again in Worcester, likely somewhere in Essex County, again, maybe around UMass Lowell area, or UMass Salem area, depending on what the need is, and hopefully not have to reactivate the Boston Convention Center.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of the National Guard, they're even here in Quincy driving a few school buses around because of the shortage there. You never thought I'd see that happen.
Yeah, I mean, we all know the workplace shortages continue, particularly at lower paying jobs in service industry, or people with high close contact front-facing industries in particular having a lot of employment issues. Expanded unemployment ended, an extension of unemployment ended last week. I'm getting some new unemployment calls regarding how come the extension isn't happening, what happened to your federal extra money, because apparently they did not know what the deadlines were. However, it is not resulting in a massive surge of these folks returning to these front-facing jobs.
Right. Yeah. It's curious. Where are they going? What are they doing? Or are they just not?
They're looking for other jobs.
Yeah.
And some of these folks are older folks. Yep. They're just tired.
Yep.
I mean, not everybody does a front-facing job under the age of 30.
Yeah, true. Good point. Yeah, that's true too. The job market is ever-changing. I don't know when it will settle down. It's going to be a while, I think.
I agree with that. I think we have quite a bit of a settle down for a while. I think we're going to have to live with trying to figure out how to deal with a nervous workforce. Vaccination obviously helps. But people are scared still at some level. Particularly with continuous contact with people that you don't know if they're vaccinated or not, because we do not require proof of vaccination before service.
Mm.
And you may be potentially yourself at risk.
Mm-hmm. It's like the ninth month of 2020 again, all over again.
We were hoping to not see that again this winter, right. 2020. However, I had a very interesting conversation with a couple of friends this week about what level of tolerance are we going to allow death? And it was actually a very interesting question because the public understands, obviously, that people die from various means. But COVID-19, unlike other types of death, has a solution with vaccine, but does not prevent death, has a high percentage of preventing death. I think it's 0.6% death rate currently in Massachusetts of vaccinated persons, significantly better than the efficacy testing. Maybe it'll go up to 1%, maybe. I don't know what the future holds.
Right.
I don't. But unlike other diseases where, for example, flu vaccines, 50% efficacy, or heart attacks or strokes, other leading causes to death, COVID vaccine provides a solution to reduce the possibility of which. So I don't think we're going to close the economy in Massachusetts. I think the vaccination rate will help that. Mm-hmm. But this is a good question for all you're listening. You know, two questions. One is, what is acceptable death for all of you, for those who don't get the vaccine? And secondly, how do you feel if you've been affected or you gave someone else the virus of which you could have prevented if you were vaccinated?
Mm.
And that's some good questions out there that I can't answer for any of you listening. I mean, you all are in charge of figuring that out on your own.
Yeah, it's an individual answer for everybody, right? Exactly.
And I think they'll get the same answer from two people.
Right.
I think everyone will have a different answer and opinion on the matter. And that's fine, but it's a good question to ask because I don't think people think about that. There is a personal responsibility to yourself. Keep other people safe. I've said that multiple times. But now it becomes a real question. How many people need to die before we have to shut down the economy? To prevent more deaths. And the question is, if there's a solution at the table that you will not partake, how many people are you going to potentially infect? Or more importantly, what do you think how many people need to die before the government needs to step in and say you need to get vaccinated?
I wonder, I bet you the governor mulls that question over privately in his head all the time.
I think every employer, major employer, the governor, the president, and even among us in the legislature, I'm not like doing it every 5 seconds thinking
sure.
about it. you know, it's somewhere in all our minds at this stage. And it's not just the government, right? Major employers have already moved forward with this. Mm-hmm. I'm sure even small employers are thinking about this because they're looking at the health and safety of themselves and their customers. If you have a super spreader or you're known as a super spreader in your business, it does not create consumer confidence.
Biogen. All you have to say is Biogen.
Precisely.
Yeah.
You know, and we did actually a restaurant tour yesterday, Tuesday in Plymouth. Today's Thursday. With my co-chair, Sue Moran, listened to some restaurants in Plymouth and Falmouth on both sides of the bridge in her district regarding how they respond to COVID-19 and different results from different types of businesses on recovery of COVID-19 business, as well as, you know, how many went to hibernation and everyone had a business, different business model. It was actually a very fascinating conversation.
Yeah. It depends on where you were financially in your business, you know, whether you could weather the storm, so to speak, or where you were in your own personal life, too. If you were kind of ready to retire in a couple of years anyway, you know, folks have decided, why wait? If you're just starting up, that's a whole different scenario, too. So interesting.
Yeah, some were outdoor seating ready, some were not. Some are multi-store businesses, some are small boutique businesses. Mm-hmm. There's actually a very good diversity of owners, restaurant owners, are discussing different challenges with different businesses, and some are seasonal, some are year-round, and some went to hibernation, and some have found out that delivery is going to continue. All of them that had deliveries during the height of pandemic continue to have a lot of takeout orders in a relatively a safe environment.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that's not going away. You know, mobile-based delivery apps are here to stay. Major retailers are doing it now, at least that, or a curbside pickup. And remote communication is here to stay in some form or other as well. So some things have changed permanently already.
Yeah, but the average takeout during high COVID was 45 to 50 and plus over restaurant business because it was takeout and delivery. But even now, it's on average, it's about 25% of a business on average.
A big part of your business, yeah.
Still a big part. And, you know, I learned about DoorDash and Uber Eats a little bit. Mm-hmm. They can consume 25% of the price of the meal that the restaurant has to pony up. So if you're geographically close to your restaurant and, you know, they're willing to deliver the food to your car, I do encourage that, not because I don't want Uber Eats or DoorDash guys to make money.
Right.
Also keep in mind that your restauranteur, your business, is assuring 25% of the cost of food.
Yep, nothing's for nothing.
Facing supply chain problems, a shortage of glass, shortage of cardboard boxes, a shortage of plastic supplies, a shortage of latex gloves and other types of safety gloves, disposable gloves. So while we have a lot of masks now, you know, restaurant industry is competing against the medical industry for a lot of similar equipment.
Yes.
And with the global economy and supply chain problems occurring in unvaccinated or low vaccinated countries right now.
Did I read, Taki, that there's delivery of marijuana in Massachusetts, recreational marijuana?
Yeah, the Cannabis Control Commission, I believe last year, actually, put forth regulations to allow cannabis to be delivered. Yeah.
Okay. At first, I'd heard of it just a little while ago, and I didn't realize that was a service that was offered.
Yeah, actually, when we did the cannabis law back in 2017, it was allowable thing for Cannabis Control Commission to implement.
Oh.
They just chose not to do anything about it until last year.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. Well, another result of the pandemic. I also read recently about the state's three casinos. I think the Plain Ridge Park is looking to expand their gaming tables.
They would like to. Right now, they're a slot parlor with a requiring horse racetrack and racehorsing simulcasting. Under the sports betting bill, we will authorize them to have some sports betting. They would like to be able to expand to a small number of table games at some point, you know, maybe some poker tables, maybe some blackjack, you know, some small amount. They're not looking to be Encore or MGM size level table games, but I mean, maybe, you know, a small number, you know, under 20.
Oh, all right. Okay.
So they want to move closer to a Racino, but they're not going to be a resort style casino.
Gotcha. Okay.
It will require legislative approval. We've had discussions. There are bills out there to do this, but nothing's really moved forward yet.
Okay. All right. Right now, it looks like the main push in Beacon Hill is trying to get the State House open again.
That's a big part of it, but I mean, legislatively, you know, sports betting is in the Senate. That's a big part of that right now. And we know we still have a lot of hearings and informational sessions and other internal functions going on among members in conversation on a variety issue. And the budget's rolling around again.
I was just going to bring up the budget, actually. Yeah, if you could tell us where that is.
Well, we have two things happening. October, we're going to close the books for fiscal year 21. Where the comptroller will give us a final number. And if there's a surplus or deficit, we'll address what it looks like at the end.
Okay.
And starting December, we'll have a revenue consensus committee formed, which is basically House Ways and Means, Senate Ways and Means, and Administration and Finance from the governor's office to decide on a consensus number based on economic forecasts from public education, you know, UMass system, as well as several private universities, as well as not-for-profit organizations with a broad range of ideologies to present to us a variety of numbers on what their projections predict moving forward.
Okay.
The Federal Reserve actually has a lot to say on this because they're going to talk about raising interest rates at some point.
Yes.
And everybody's heard the word inflation a lot.
Yeah. Yeah,
there is inflation, folks. It is true, and it's not labor costs; it's supply chain driven.
Yeah, it's quite obvious when you go fill up your car with gas, or you know, go to the grocery store. It's right there in front of you. Yeah,
missed the days of $1.99 last summer.
Right? Gone.
Definitely $2.99, right?
Yeah. So, well, and the heating season's coming up too, so that's going to be an issue too.
Yeah, you've also seen in Europe they're having a natural gas shortage.
Hmm.
That's also increased their energy costs a little bit, well into 1,000%, depending on the day. So, you know, as we reopen the world, there was a lot of hibernation from a lot of industries because no one's using their resources, including natural gas.
Right.
And as we come out of hibernation economically and hopefully not go back into hibernation because of a COVID winter, you know, it's affecting the entire global economy that affects you actually at home. Like I said earlier, there's a shortage of glass. It's competing against the medical industry for glass. You know, those vials are made of glass that your test tubes, you know, swabs, you know, latex is, and other types of non-latex gloves, there's material costs there. But toilet paper is not a problem, folks. So do not hoard your toilet paper. please. That is a supply chain problem.
Yeah. It really is interesting. And it really is indicative of how much of a global economy we live in today. You know, not just economy, obviously socioeconomics as well.
Yeah. I mean, even domestic supply chain like glass, you know, it's not all manufactured overseas. It's just we can keep up demand. You know, prioritization right now continues to be COVID medically related, which again, vaccination's very important, you know, because it allows some normalization again of the rest of the supply chain industry, which has shifted pretty much all medical.
Yep. We're still here. We're still playing the game.
Exactly. And I talked a little bit about the high ICU rates and hospitalizations a bit. And, you know, every time someone goes to a hospital, eats up another supply. That may have been preventable through vaccination.
Just exasperation, I think. Yeah.
I know. And it's not just us, obviously. I mean, a lot of parts of the world are not as fortunate as we are to have vaccines. You know, that impacts the global supply chain too.
Absolutely. And, yeah, that's been talked about at the UN meeting this week, actually, the vaccine inequity in poorer countries.
We're discussing a third shot here.
Right.
Countries haven't seen the first shot. A whole continent of Africa, you know, has seen almost no vaccine relative size of the population when you look at it carefully. You know, efficacy and quality of vaccine really matters. And the U.S. has the highest quality of vaccines And we have the ability to buy a lot of vaccine and make it available to the public. And we now are donating vaccines, especially vaccines are ending shelf life that we really need to give to somebody else that's willing to use it.
True.
And, you know, it's a chance again for the United States to lead the world in the crisis. But again, it's one of those things where we, like an airplane going down, you put your mask on first.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing in the United States. We're putting our mask on first so we can help the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, the president did acknowledge that the pandemic has to end for everyone in order for it to end. So he's well aware of that. It's just a process of getting through it.
Yeah, it's a variant problem, right? I mean, we had a variant coming out of California, a variant coming out of London, a variant coming out of South Africa, a variant coming out of Brazil, a variant coming out of Colombia, a variant coming out of India. You know, and there will likely be another variant. Mm-hmm. Whether, you know, it's mutated probably 10,000 times by now. Most of the times, it's not a major change, but I mean, you know, if another mutation causes another variant that becomes more infectious, you know, we could be back where we started in the beginning of 2020.
Mm.
So vaccination is the key, and global vaccination is 100% necessary.
Let's hope we don't get to that point. How about some good news, Tacky?
Good news, huh?
Yeah, I know, I'm probably not the person to ask.
I mean, the Red Sox are still in pennant chase, and you know, the Patriots had a good game against a bad Jets team, so that's a good thing. Theaters are back open. I mean, you know, although they're requiring COVID vaccination proof and COVID negative tests, I mean, the theaters are back open. Live entertainment's coming back.
Yep.
And the TD Bank, I know there's some controversial folks, about, you know, going back to games at TD Bank, but you're sitting next to somebody, and do you know that person's okay or not? You know, so, you know, the venues are working the best to, you know, let you come to some normality. But you know, there is some responsibility of these venues to keep you safe. I don't know if people understand that sometimes. It's like, you know, people come to visit your home. You know, you don't want people to slip and fall.
Right.
You know, and, you know, if you like have grandma over, you want to make sure that, you know, things are safe, you know, for grandma, or you have people with young children and you don't want to leave, you know, things that could drop or hurt a child. I mean, you know, landlords, venues, restaurants, stores, they all have a responsibility to keep us safe as guests come to use their facilities, and we obey their rules to help keep them safe and our safety as well.
Yeah, they're private entities. You know, people forget it's a privately owned and operated business. They have to worry about their own employees and their, you know, their employees' families. So it has a broad impact for sure.
Yeah, we saw this in, you know, early last year. I mean, we saw what happened to getting our pork from Hormel when they had a infection going in one of the meat packing plants in South Dakota, a very low vaccination state, a state that the government denies basically COVID exists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you look what happened. I mean, China shut down the second biggest cargo port because of a vaccination, shutting down global supply. Keeping employees safe is essential. And again, we talk about the workplace shortage. If employees aren't confident about the people they're serving not infecting them, well, why would you want to do that job, folks?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of rethinking and reshifting and reprioritizing going on in the workforce right now, for sure. Yeah.
People going back to the movies somewhat. I mean, you know, Shang-Chi is top grossing movie in America for a few weeks now. Great Marvel movie, Asian American film. Wonderful, wonderfully done. It hit my top five list of favorite
films.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, while Marvel movies have very common formula, but also have different themes.
So, yeah, yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay.
You know, I highly recommend it.
There you go.
I did go in a theater. I did go on a Sunday. I went on a low volume day.
All right.
You know, there was like 20 some odd people at AMC and Braintree. I was very comfortable. I made sure I got a seat with a space between me and the next person.
Yep.
And, you know, wore a mask the whole time and it was comfortable.
There you go. There are ways to you know, be safe and still have somewhat of a life. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you want to live your life out there, I mean, you know, you're willing to keep yourself safe. The inconvenience is not that awful. So, I mean, I was able to enjoy film. and, you know, get out and have a little bit of normality.
So you want to talk a little bit about the Boston Mayor's race, Tacky? I'm curious to your take. You know, Michelle Wu did incredibly well in the primary.
She absolutely did, even though it was less than 100,000 people turning out.
Yeah.
She did a remarkable 33%. I mean, clearly she's the front runner. However, I mean, it's still a 66% didn't vote for in a low turnout situation, right?
Right, right. Yep.
So the real Anessis George, and this is Asabi George.
Yep.
This, I keep forgetting the Asabi part. you know, presents another interesting challenge. It's two people of color, both women, for the first time running in Boston. So no matter what, history will be made. And it'll be interesting to see what happens when the vote turnout basically going to probably double or triple into the final. And I think it'd be the most expensive mayor's race you're going to see in your life, I think, between the two candidates and the super PACs kicking in big money.
Okay.
Push the candidates. This could reach 10 to 15 or maybe outside chance of 20 million, but I think definitely the $10 million, $15 million range.
A lot of money for a city election, yeah.
A lot of money. And it's about turnout, right? GOTV, get out the vote.
Yep.
And the question is interesting because some of the global polling actually did not use the mayor's race from 4 years ago or the council race from 2 years ago. They actually used it, the presidential primary race from 2020 as their polling numbers, which I thought was kind of interesting because people who vote in municipal elections are not necessarily the same people who vote in presidential elections.
True, yeah.
And the numbers are actually very accurate on some of these polls regarding Michelle's numbers. And a tight race for second. People, the Globe is making like a black and white issue. It's a little more complicated than just race. You know, the living is very high in Boston. There's police issues that came up all through last year in Boston. I think some of it was a little bit unfounded because we're actually a very safe state. And police is pretty good overall. I mean, very much different from other states. And actually other countries too, when you think about it. We're doing a very good job. The crime rate is not that high, actually, despite a lot of bad news to see, comparatively speaking to other years. But it also suffering the major economic loss from lack of tourism, people working in Boston, huge economic impact that the mayor has to deal with.
Yeah.
And you have actually another funny dynamic because you have an acting mayor now who lost the mayor's race, who's basically a lame duck, but still holds enormous power for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got some really interesting dynamics, politically speaking. And now endorsements truly matter. And my personal opinion, they don't have a lot of time to cut a deal. If they're going to use for endorsements, they have to be very rapid. And it's been over a week and a half now, and I'm still surprised that something's not popped yet.
Interesting. Yeah. Is Michelle's, you know, performance positive for the Asian community?
Yeah, it shows that we can compete in big races. Then again, I also can compete in big races. So let's not sell it short here. What's also interesting about Asian Americans, for many of us, win in districts that are not minority large districts.
Right. Yeah.
It's not a large minority district, despite the fact that Quincy is, you know, clearly won the 40 percentile regarding people of color. But my good friend Tron Nguyen up in Andover, not a large minority district. Maria Robinson Framia, not a big minority district. Even my good friend Donald Wong, who is a Republican, wins a small minority, a small number of minorities, as well as being a Republican in a Democratic stronghold.
Yep.
My friend Kiko Oro, who is no longer a rep, but she won in Lakeville.
Oh, okay. Not a big Asian population there, I'm guessing.
A lot of people of color area.
Yeah.
And then you have Roddy Mum and Vanna Howard up in Lowell, which does have a large Cambodian population.
Yeah.
I think Roddy's the only one of a minority district, which is not 100% Cambodian people of color. We have proven over the years we can win despite the concept of racial voting, which I think can be a little bit overblown. But I think it's interesting in Boston about who has the vision for a future Boston. Yeah, climate change is a big deal for Boston. The waterfront is major issues.
Yep.
Continuation of COVID. I mean, the lead in the Boston school system, you know, super problems in the Boston school system, the Boston Latin school issues. And Inessa is actually a school teacher.
Yes.
In the front of people's minds. And a lot of unions were sitting on the sidelines. People didn't notice the union endorsements. They weren't a lot compared to the size of the city. So those will be coming out very quickly as they make the final decisions who they want to back.
Yeah.
And it's also an interesting thing because Michelle is not a Boston native. She's only really been there for about 9+ years as a counsel. And she came there for Harvard Law School. So, you know, living in the city probably a dozen plus years. Mm-hmm. That's someone that is a child of immigrants who's native, which is Anessa. And she is a Boston native.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting.
That'll be interesting as well if the population city is a little less or more provincial about wanting somebody that actually knows their neighborhoods because they grew up in all of them, another one who had to learn their neighborhoods more recently. Mm-hmm. It's a big city, folks. It's not like you learn every single neighborhood, you know, in just a decade. It's a lot more involved.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, affordable housing is going to be an issue no matter who gets elected going forward too.
Well, there's also been a shortage in the housing market. Yeah. Housing sales have slowed down in July and August because of lack of supply.
Right.
With the lack of demand. And people, well, are not giving up the Boston homes. They're buying suburban homes or summer homes in the Cape or in Western Mass or perhaps New Hampshire. But they're not giving up the homes in Boston.
Right. Yep.
So, I mean, that's you're going to have this problem of housing shortage caused by people with some means who are not giving up their properties, creating empty tenancy. And the Boston mayor is going to have to figure out how to deal with those issues, a very complicated issue. In Nessa's case, interesting, and I'm not saying I'm touting her, but you know, her husband is a developer.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. As he saw the Globe, that can hurt you and help you
yes.
in politics.
Yeah.
So it isn't like they're not aware of housing issues. So there's that factor as well.
Yeah, and it is changing the dynamics in those seasonal communities you mentioned also, the Cape, the Berkshires, Connecticut Shore, New Hampshire. So they have their own challenges there as well.
Let me attempt to try to make this a narrative of partisan politics, and I don't think it's going to work. We're going to try to put Anessa as the conservative, moderate conservative Democrat with Trump backers, which is untrue, versus the liberal left, AOC-ish type Michelle. I just don't see that playing into Boston like it does in places like New York. I do think that voters, just like in Quincy and other municipalities, are much more grounded in looking for. They're looking for some practicality in day-to-day lives. They want to return to some normalcy. So I do truly believe the media is going to try to paint this picture of this kind of right and left municipal race. And I'm just doubting the voters are going to go for that.
The puritanical roots here in New England are going to shine through.
And I think they're looking for like neighborhood concerns. The mayor candidate that can actually communicate to the many, many different types of neighborhoods in that city will be the one that's going to succeed.
Yeah. All right. Anything else we should touch on today, Think Techie? There's plenty going on, that's for sure. Maybe we can catch up next week. I know you have hearings today, so we'll have more to talk about next week.
Yeah, no, session today, and then I don't know what the schedule is, but okay. I suspect the speaker will accelerate the schedule as we move through the fall. And, you know, congratulations on receiving a certificate from the Friends of Walson Beach on Sunday. Saw you on Sunday in person, you know, so.
Thank you. It was great to see you. And I really appreciate the group's recognition. They're a wonderful group of people, and they've done a lot of good work for Walson Beach, making it much nicer than it has been in many years.
Yeah. And we took a walk down the stroll together down on actually a very beautiful Sunday.
Yes. And congratulations to you as well and your award from the president of the Wollaston Beach Association. So that was great.
Yeah, no, thank you. It was nice to know. Yeah, we sound really pretentious now, don't we? Thank you, Jennifer. on video.
We'll pat each other on our backs, right?
But it's actually more of them than us, right?
That's right.
Yeah, these are great folks who are well into 2 decades now working hard to.
That's right.
You know, preserve a valuable resource for all of us.
No question. We're doing our jobs. They're doing it because they want to.
And then they truly love it. So for people who have not had a chance, you know, please look up Friends of Walson Beach and perhaps consider joining or volunteer at one of the events. They do things like beach cleanup. They do raise money by splash, you know, like March or January splashes, which I'm not sure why you want to get into freezing cold water, but that's just me personally. They do have like family fun days during the summer, and they're looking at other projects during next summer to try to create some family, safe family entertainment for everybody. And they work with groups like Save the Harbor, Save the Bay on these projects. And I'm actually on the state Metropolitan Beaches Commission appointed by the speaker that we work with Save the Harbor, Save the Bay and other waterfront groups to find more ways to obviously keep the beach clean. Everyone do their part. Don't throw stuff in the water. Pick up your dog stuff. And just everyone try to share a very common and wonderful resource that we have.
Yes, there is no poop fairy, as the signs say. And you're right, it is a great resource. A lot of people come to Quincy because of the beaches. So absolutely.
No, absolutely. So, you know, it does us do our part. And like I said, if you want to partake, you know, please look up Friends of Walsam Beach on their Facebook and, talk to them. So we always get to this part of the segment of how to find me. You know, 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. My staff has moved out of vacation mode in August, and we all around. You can look at my Facebook at State Representative Tacky Chan. You can see me in public hearings on Facebook. And we do have TackyChan.org, which provides mostly resource phone numbers. And of course, Keyway TV provides you with our resource as well. Just look them up on YouTube and you can find some, not me, but others, people that can provide you useful information in this community. So we're open, we're working, and, you know, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov is my email. And I checked that before we started the call today. And I'm receiving a lot of testimony, not just constituent concerns at this point.
Okay. Appreciate it, Tacky. Always good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, and I'll see you another week.